For the past 3 years, if there's one name that's kept cropping up in the circumstances of Mustafa Zaidi's death, that's Mumtaz Bhutto, a politician and cousin of the former Prime Minister Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, who was very influential in the 1970s. We've heard from at least one person that Mumtaz Bhutto allegedly tried to bribe a bureaucrat by sending a briefcase of money to their house and had tried to have them killed when they refused.
And so, perhaps because of fear and some reality that Mumtaz Bhutto was actually capable of doing such a thing, when people were casting around for suspects in the death of Mustafa Zaidi, they landed on Mumtaz Bhutto. If he had allegedly threatened other government officials, why couldn't he have threatened Mustafa Zaidi? I'm Sabah Imtiaz.
And I'm Tuba Masood.
And this is
Notes on a Scandal. And that Mumtaz Bhutto rumor then got extended to Shehnaz. If the assumption is that she's sleeping around with powerful men, why not Mumtaz Bhutto? But this rumor is a bit strange. Even now, people don't like talking about it. And it's worth noting that at least one socialite told us there was no chance that Mumtaz and Shehnaz were having an affair. We weren't able to talk to Mumtaz Bhutto about this, as he died last year. But conspiracy theorists also landed on another theory.
Yahya Khan, the Marshall Law Administrator and President in 1970. After the war in 1971 between Pakistan and India, which ended with the independence of Bangladesh, which was then known as East Pakistan, stories began to emerge of Yahya's affair with women because of the conduct of the Pakistan Army in East Pakistan. The most well-known allegation is against Madam Noorjahan, the iconic Pakistani musician who was accused of having an affair with Yahya. And then there was General Rani, an infamous woman called Akleem Akhtar, who was one of the president's confidants, and that's how she had earned the nickname General, and allegedly helped solicit women and booze for him. Shortly after the war, it was like a dam had burst. Stories about serving generals and sexual abuse and brothels and women were reported in the press, as well as to an inquiry commission that was investigating the war. Mysterious Rani put under house arrest, Star newspaper reported in January 1972. Women's names were mentioned on television and in the newspapers. Noorjahan had to tearfully deny allegations. And amid all of this, Mustafa's brother Irtiza accused Shehnaz of having links with Yahya and said that is why Mustafa was afraid of her. This is based on the story that Mustafa had told Irtiza that Shehnaz was influential, she was the one pursuing him, and that she wouldn't forgive him if he didn't accept her offer of marriage.
And then there's the mystery of Mustafa's missing poem. Nasir Turabi recalled that he had only seen one verse of this.
So one of Mustafa Zaidi's poems, which Irtiza had picked up, I only remember a verse of it, which was, Mera rakib hai ab sadre mumlikat yaar.
Nasir never got a hold of the poem. According to him, Irtiza, Mustafa's brother, had it with him, and it was among the things in Mustafa's apartment.
So this mysterious poem, I think when Nasir Turabi told us the story, the implication was that Mustafa was naming the person responsible for his death or his downfall.
Yeah, I agree. At least what I feel is like when Kohinida Mustafa recounts this incident with his army official's brother, that might have had something to do with it. You know, he reached a point in his life where he was like, you know, okay, now I want to name and shame people to show that I wasn't the bad guy, like I wasn't the corrupt government officer. So I think it's quite possible.
But I also think, given that Mustafa was trying to leave the country and he kept getting denied permission to do so, possibly when he's naming Yahya or saying that the president of the country is now a fool, then that's more that he's trapped in the situation because of Yahya and the regime versus that Yahya is the one who has a gun to his head. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to say because this mysterious poem, which was among Mustafa's things and was one of the last things he had written, we've never seen this actual poem and we don't even know what context this verse was written in.
Or if it really exists.
But Nasir remembered this verse quite vividly.
I think the possibility of this poem existing or being there, it might be in one of Irtiza's many, many boxes of case files and documents. But I feel like Mustafa had been pushed in a corner and this could have been him striking out. Like, there's so many things that lead up to it, right? The government actually being after him. There was that mysterious letter someone had sent Irtiza. Shehnaz having influential contacts. We saw so many newspaper stories afterwards, yeah, which alluded to these influential men. We just don't know.
In the aftermath of the war, because there were so many stories about Yahya, that it really became very convenient for people to put one and one together, yeah. essentially put two and two together, I guess, like one and many women together, yes. and say that, oh, if all of these other women were having it off with Yahya, then Shehnaz, this woman of extremely ill repute now, who's been in the press, she must also have been this. True. And Nasir isn't the only one who implied this. There were other people we've interviewed.
Many other people said, spoke to.
You know, she was one of his women. Mm-hmm. Nobody has any proof of this. We've actually asked, oh, well, did you see her with Yahya? And people are like, no.
We also didn't find anything in the archives which linked her to him, the case that followed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also, this is possibly true for anyone who dies a mysterious death, right? That at the end, you're really casting around for suspects and any kind of hints. And obviously, all that Nasir and his friends have left are these unfinished poems and these verses and the letters and the things that Mustafa has said. And that's obviously where their minds went to. Is that?
Yeah, I think when someone dies, it just becomes a natural thing because, you know, you start going over things they might have said, things they might have written, or the possibilities of these things. I think it could have also just been plausible at the time.
Just like Mumtaz Bhutto, you know, because he was influential and he was believed to be...
And had a reputation of doing this kind
exactly. of thing. So then it becomes even easier. Yeah. If he did it to all the other people, he could have done it to Mustafa too, right?
Agreed.
And if you have that reputation, then it's easy. I think also then that kind of got stretched out to, well, was he having an affair with Shehnaz? This is what the story has become about or will become about, is that it turns into not who killed Mustafa, but what was Shehnaz going really up to? So it was either Mumtaz Bhutto or President Yahya.
The smugglers.
Or Salim Khan. Or was it Mustafa Zaidi or Shehnaz Gul? Both of them have this motive to want to get rid of the person that they loved.
There was definitely a lot of motive involved for all of these people, I think. But obviously more particularly for Mustafa and Shehnaz.
So did Mustafa kill Shehnaz?
Or did Shehnaz kill Mustafa?
What if this was all an accident?
It's possible.
In that he didn't intend to kill her. That by dosing her, he only meant to knock her out.
But then did he intend to kill himself?
Or that it was an accidental overdose?
Well, I feel like given what we have learned about Mustafa in our research, is that he definitely had a history of trying to kill himself. We know he's done it several times before, especially when he's in love with someone and things aren't working out his way. So I do feel like there's a possibility that he tried to do the same thing over here, but in this case, he didn't have a fallback option. Like previously, when he tried to kill himself in Lahore, he had actually called Masood Ashar and said that, you know, come. Like, you know, I've done this, come. Maybe the thing was over here, like, I remember reading in one of the court files that we have that he told his nephew to drop by in the evening. Now, maybe he expected the nephew would drop by or maybe the nephew would call and he would be able to tell him to come, that something's happened. But it didn't work out that way.
One of the things that we haven't really seen in any of the medical reports to indicate that the doctors who did the postmortems or analyzed all of the medical reports was that they even considered the theory of an accidental overdose, which makes me think maybe it wasn't as common then as it is now.
There's definitely a possibility, but I think we should also remember when you're talking about this is that Mustafa had been drinking.
Well, we don't know this for sure.
We don't know for sure. We just know that he bought the alcohol.
Yeah, we don't even know if he consumed any. And I don't think that there's any medical report we've seen that mentions liquor in any capacity.
Yeah,
it mentions the medication, but not alcohol.
But somehow, what if it was premeditated from Mustafa's side? What if this was his grand plan that...
Tuba, can you sketch out this grand plan, please?
Okay. So
how do you think this grand plan worked?
I think what happened was... Mustafa decided that he would kill Shehnaz and then kill himself.
Okay.
So he gave her the drink or the powder from the Hakim Saab when he gave her coffee juice and she passed out. And then a few hours later, he took the same thing or he took something different. But the result would have been death. But I think that because Mustafa obviously hadn't measured it properly, Shehnaz just passed out and he died.
Wait, so he measured it out properly for himself, but not for
her? I know, I feel like that's the issue, right? Because he didn't measure it out. He just took some for himself and he gave her some. Maybe he thought that a lesser dosage would work for her.
So Mustafa, in addition to being a government officer, a master's in English literature, and a poet, is also now a chemist?
I think the murder-suicide theory is something that could fit in. But it could also be that he didn't intend for both of them to die. He just intended that they would be found in a compromising position.
So I want to punch a hole in your theories.
Go ahead.
So he gives Shehnaz this drug.
Yeah.
And then he just sits there while she's passed out. Why doesn't he answer any of the phones that he's getting? And what time
is he? He's getting phones later, didn't he? He didn't get calls immediately after.
He gets calls before the time of death. If he's believed to have died at 7 or 8 p.m., then...
Maybe the drugs took a little longer to...
So he's at least awake when Nasir Tarabi is calling him.
Maybe he didn't want to pick up.
So he just sits there while she's unconscious or thinks that she's dead.
Yeah.
And then just kills himself.
Yeah. Do you have an alternative to this theory?
My other big problem with this theory is, who goes in and opens the locks in the garage to find the posters?
Maybe they were already open.
Maybe. Seems very coincidental that the one thing damning piece of proof here is somehow mysteriously looks like the locks have been forced open. It's not like that they were opened normally.
So if you don't agree with my theory, what is your theory?
I think your theory explains everything. It just doesn't account for the flyers. If somebody would explain to me how these locks were forcibly broken open, that would make sense. And from my understanding of what we've read in all of these files, it seems that the locks were broken open on two occasions, right? Once right when they got there, and then a few days later. Now, it's possible that we have this wrong, and that actually the locks were broken open a day later, because I don't think the police found the locks on the first day. They found them on the second day, right? So it's possible that on that same night that somebody went back in. That seems quite likely. So,
I mean, it is possible, given this case, because there's so many things that happened afterwards as well, like the cups.
Yeah, exactly. So that makes sense. But maybe we have this the other way around.
Maybe Shanaz killed him?
Yeah, she gives him the medicine.
Why would you think that she's the one who did it?
She has motive.
What's her motive?
Mustafa's made her life a living hell. He's threatening to blackmail her. He has revenge porn. The list just adds up.
But don't you think that's something... Then why would you go over to see him?
To do this.
To get rid of him. Do you think Celine knew?
Maybe, maybe not.
Okay, why don't you play out your scene?
Maybe Shanaz didn't go there with the intention of killing him.
Okay.
But she had something with her in case things went wrong. And they clearly did. They fought. He was still very insistent. He didn't like he was repenting in any way. He still was insisting that she marry him. Maybe she found out about the flyers.
But then Sabah, if she had the poison with her, doesn't that show...
It's not a poison, it's a sedative.
I mean, okay, fine, sedative. Doesn't that show a little bit of premeditation?
Yes, maybe it was a fall back option, right? Either way, she went there with the intention of something, right? And then either she does it, or whatever we discussed in our last episode. Either she did it, or she couldn't go through with it herself, and she opens the door for Salim, and he does it. They get they open the lockers. They somehow don't take the flyers away with them, which doesn't also make sense. True. Why wouldn't you do that? True. They don't do a very good job of covering up this crime. And then she takes a sedative a few hours before the morning, which means that she is still unconscious by the time the police break in at 9. And she's the only one alive to tell this tale. There's not much evidence left to show that this is murder, right? There's no blood pouring out. There's no murder weapon.
Yeah.
The man is already well known to be... has a history of depressive behavior, who's tried to kill himself several times. Everyone knows that he's going through a bad patch in his life, so there's not it's not like it's a surprise in some way. And so it kind of just makes sense. And she's the only one alive to tell the tale. And remember, the police did buy this for the first few days.
But what if there's another theory, another thing that a lot of people brought up when we went to interview them? The suicide pact. I remember initially when we started the research, everywhere we went, people were like, oh, they had a suicide pact. What about that?
Yeah, very Romeo and Juliet situation, which actually was brought up in court, that this was a very Romeo and Juliet situation in which both of them had decided to kill themselves because they couldn't be together or whatever their reasons were. And so they both took this drug and Shanaz managed to survive somehow. And there's one story that we read in a paper, which has only been reported in one newspaper, which is why we don't believe this. But this newspaper had this extremely breathless account of Shanaz telling the police that, yes, it was a suicide pact, but when she saw Mustafa take the drug and suffer, she couldn't go through with it.
And that story actually also has there are inconsistencies if you look at it with the court file, because obviously the time of death and the time she passed out, they don't match.
Yeah.
So it definitely doesn't look like it could have been that.
And a suicide pact would make sense if Shanaz was also just as committed to this idea. Mm-hmm. Shanaz doesn't seem in this entire saga to ever be willing to leave her husband or to be backed into such a corner or to want to leave her children. She wants to leave Mustafa, sure. But She definitely doesn't want to kill herself for Mustafa's sake.
I feel like she, maybe a part of her did love him, or like, you know, definitely loved him more before Mustafa started harassing her in this way. But I don't think she would ever have agreed to a suicide pact.
Yeah.
I feel that for me, the murder-suicide thing fits better because I feel that Mustafa was the one who was desperate enough to do something, to show something, to, because of how dramatic he was in certain circumstances, I feel like it is something that he could have done. But then when I think about it, and we've had so many discussions about this on Sundays where we flip-flop between the two theories, but then there are days that I do feel that Shanaz could have done it. Because imagine there's this man who's literally making your life a living hell. You're up-and-coming socialite. You have a family. You have two daughters. I'm sure at one point she must have been thinking, like, you know, what about their future?
How can we get rid of this
man? Yeah, and how to get rid of this man who was practically stalking her and spreading all these rumors about her, that she's this. I mean, the whole Christine Keeler angle.
What if it wasn't murder-suicide in the way you're thinking? What if he gave her the pill so that she wouldn't have to see him die? Like an act of mercy, almost.
Can you explain yourself? I don't mean that in a court setting. I'm just trying to understand. Jat sahab,
mera mokif ye hai. He had planned to kill himself, but that he didn't want her to see it. And so he wanted to spare her this horror of seeing him suffer, that she would wake up and her problems would be over.
But see, my problem with that is his family is very adamant on the fact that he wasn't depressed.
Which blows a big hole in your murder-suicide theory.
It does, and I realize that. But the thing is that I feel like at least the Mustafa that I know is someone who would have done that.
Murder-suicide.
Yeah.
But he's not suicidal according to his family.
Yeah.
And nothing is really final. There's no like line that's been drawn in the sand here for Mustafa. Potentially, he could have been able to travel in a few months. Yes, like he's received a horrible setback that he can't leave immediately. Mm-hmm. But his wife and children still love him. He still has money.
The one thing I would like to say is that we saw all the kind of letters he wrote to his family, right? We saw like how they were full of affection. And like, you know, he was very concerned and he obviously felt very bad that he couldn't be there for his family. But then you have the Shanaz poems. You have all his interaction with Shanaz, like, you know, the whole airplane incident.
But all of this stuff happens before. So maybe he's like, he's done and this Shanaz chapter is kind of almost over. And, well, I guess it's not almost over because he's begging her to see him.
Exactly.
Days before too. To me, seems like a man who doesn't have much left, like, in his emotional life. And so he's kind of clutching at straws to keep on to Shanaz, right? There's no other woman on the horizon. Yeah. And he's not playing the field, really. And so I think it's just an attempt to hold on to something that was good for a long time or for a short period of time.
I mean, yeah.
And that explains his desperation to see her because, you know, I think when things are going bad, you want to hold on to one thing, right, that's going well for you.
You want some stability.
And you want some control. And I think to lose, like, to have suddenly this woman turn on you, especially for another man, maybe, or for whatever you think the reasons are, it may seem that he was just trying to hold on to her. It's just with each of these theories, there's one problem, right? There's like one big thing.
Yeah, there's nothing that fits in neatly.
That punches a hole in this thing. But what's strange to me is that all of these theories were out in the universe, and yet the police finally came up with murder.
I feel that's also because of what was happening. Like, I remember reading a lot of editorials where the police's work was being questioned. So how they kept changing the investigation team over and over again. Like, there was this big divide between the police in Ayub's time and the police in Yahya's time. And I feel like one of their motives, at least the police's motives, to make it, to try her for murder was to show that, look, we are doing work.
And also think about, like, public sentiment, right? Mm-hmm. There was such talk in the air that this was a conspiracy, that this was murder, that the police was covering it up, that they were favoring her. Yeah. You know, the Sindh High Court's Chief Justice took suo motu notice of this case based on the public impression that, you know, facts were being covered up. Mm-hmm. And so I can also see, just like it happens now, that the police would have felt compelled to go for the murder theory versus anything else. Do you and I have a unified theory of what we think happened?
On most days. I feel like you do agree with my murder-suicide theory.
If only you could explain the flyers.
Yeah. I also believe your murder one.
The really interesting thing about all of this is, what if this murder-suicide theory is completely wrong? And that Shanaz did it.
High possibility.
And got away with it.
But see, Saba, for me, the problem with that is, Shanaz ended up back in society. She ended up living a full life. She's married to Salim. her daughter's tombs and everything. Can you live with murder?
But the flip side also is that if she didn't do it, then of course she had a right to be back in society. And of course she had nothing wrong that she had done in her life. Mm-hmm. And of course, then you imagine that this woman spent a long time just fighting the Star.
Eventually, Shahnaz was arrested for the murder of Mustafa Zaidi. The trial took another 2 years. Her face was plastered on every major newspaper.
But it wasn't just that her face was in the newspapers. Pakistan's press turned the story into the biggest scandal of its time, mentioning everything from sex instruments, porn, and love sessions. Dozens of people would go to court just to catch a glimpse of the infamous Shahnaz Gul.
In the next season of Notes on a Scandal, the state versus Shahnaz Gul.
I'm Saba Imtiaz.
And I'm Tuba Masood.
And you were listening to
Notes on a Scandal.
Thank you very much for listening to the first season of Notes on a Scandal. We are extremely blown over by everyone who has heard it, has reached out to us, has followed us on Instagram and on Twitter, and who has messaged us in the last couple of weeks saying, when is the next episode coming? We're very sorry it was delayed. But, you know, in Pakistan, there was a lot going on. Yep. And I'm sure there was enough for you to watch on television anyway.
We would also like to thank Bilal Tanveer and Shima Kirmani for reciting poems for us. We would also like to thank the CEJ at IBA for letting us use their facilities.
And we're very excited about the next season of Notes on a Scandal. As we've mentioned before, this podcast is supplementing research we're doing into a book called Society Girl, which we're looking for a publisher for. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm Saba Imtiaz.
I'm Tabahi Tuba.
And on Instagram, we're at MurderMystery70. And I'm Saba Imtiaz.
And I'm Tabahi Tuba.
And the next season of Notes on a Scandal will be back within the next couple of weeks, barring any major political crisis again. Thank you and
stay tuned. This episode of Notes on a Scandal was recorded at the Center of Excellence in Journalism at the IBA.